Welcome to the Phil Mason Show!
The Whiz Kids had won it, Bobby Thompson had done it, and Yogi read the comics all the while. Rock and roll was being born, marijuana we would scorn. So down on the corner, the national pastime went on trial. We're talking baseball, Klazuski Campanella. Talking baseball, the man and Bobby fella, the scooter, the barber and the nuke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque, especially Willie, Mickey and the Duke. Well, Casey was winning, Hank Aaron was beginning, one Robbie going out, one coming in. Kiner and Midget Goodell, the Thumper and Mel Parnell, and Ike was the only one winning down in Washington. I'm talking baseball, Klazuski Campanella. Talking baseball, the man and Bobby fella, the scooter, the barber and the duke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque, especially Willie, Mickey and the Duke. Now my old friend, the Bachelor, well, he swore he was the Oklahoma kid. And Cookie played hooky to go and see the Duke. And me, I always loved Willie Mae. Those were the days. Well, now it's the 80s, and Brett is the greatest, and Bobby Bonds can play for everyone. Rose is at the vet, Rusty again is a Met, and the great Alexander is pitching again in Washington. I'm talking baseball, like Reggie, Queasy, and Berry. Talking baseball, Carew and Gaylord Perry, Seaver, Garvey, Schmidt, and Vida Blue. And it's no fluke, they'll be with Willie, Mickey and the Duke. Willie, Mickey and the Duke.
Say hey, say hey, say hey.
It was Willie, Mickey and the Duke.
Say hey, say hey, say hey.
I'm talking Willie.
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. That was Terry Cashman, Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. It is May the 6th. It is 2013. It is also Easter Monday here in Greece. We want to wish everyone a happy Easter to my Orthodox friends and colleagues in this beautiful country of Greece and in Russia and wherever else you're celebrating Orthodox Easter. I'll tell you something. It is going to be a very good show today. And I really appreciate having you all here on Max Sports Channels every day at 5 p.m. Eastern. At 10 p.m. Eastern on TalkSuperStation.com. And at various times during the day on iRadio.LA, IndependentRadio.LA. We have yet to lock in a specific time yet because we're still doing demographics. Or they are, I should say. But we'll let you know when you can listen to the show. Today is Baseball Monday, and joining me on the show from sports-kings.com/reading-between-the-seams, Mr. David Whitlock. David, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. Yeah, I think you're getting too comfortable with that sports-kings.com, reading between the seams. You've had it right. I don't know how many weeks in a row now, but hey, you still got it right this time. Just kind of took a pause there. But no, excited to be back. It's always great to talk baseball on Monday because you can talk about the last weekend series. You can look ahead. There's a lot of news going on. Unfortunately, more injuries, but that's kind of part of the game. There's definitely been some interesting series, some interesting matchups. We're starting to see some of the better teams we expected to rise to the top. And then a couple teams we'll probably talk about today that are still underachieving, and we'll try to get into the win, the whys and wins and when they're going to turn it around, essentially. So can't wait to talk about it this hour.
That's exactly right. And you know what? We switched the theme song today specifically for your dad. You know, he's not getting everything done. He is jamming to John Fogerty a little too much there. We got to switch the tune in his head. I'm sure your mom will appreciate it too, right?
That's right. Yeah, he won't be singing in the shower. No, he won't sing in the shower probably ever. I've never heard the man sing in my life, and I've known him for my entire life, obviously. But and an early Happy Mother's Day to my mom. We're, I guess, 6 days away now, this being Monday, but it's coming up on that. So lots of holidays. You got your Orthodox Easter. Today being Sunday that we're taping, this is also Cinco de Mayo, which in Texas where I am is kind of a big deal. And then we got Mother's Day next week. So lots going on.
That's right. Happy Mother's Day out there. Mrs. Whitlock, you've raised a wonderful son.
She'll appreciate that.
I'm sure she knows, you know. And one day when he grows up, he can work for NASA.
Oh, that'd be great if that ever works out.
If that ever worked out, yeah. Because, you know, the people that write in, they say, how can you two dummies even exist sometimes? Because we talk about some teams that people love and we don't specifically.
Right.
And I just laugh. I said, dude, we don't work for NASA. So first up, in Atlanta, they've been kind of waiting for Brian McCann to be activated, and today he will be. Now, I don't know what that will do to Atlanta. They haven't seemed to even miss him, have they?
Well, no, yes and no. You know, Atlanta was the hot team coming out of the gate, and they certainly shot right to the top of the AL East, especially with some other teams who are struggling, like the Nationals, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and then the Phillies, which was my pick. But suddenly you're starting to look, and Atlanta's hasn't been doing that well. They're only 3-7 in their last 10. My big question is, okay, you get a guy like McCann back. He's been the face of Atlanta, obviously, with Chipper Jones has been the face of Atlanta, but now that he's gone. So now you're looking at a guy like McCann that's been on the team for the better part of a decade, been the team leader, always been there for their postseason appearances. He's coming back, but you've got Evan Gattis, who's been hot, who's kind of carried that team a few games with his power during their successful stretch. So I'm anxious to see what happens. McCann's coming back. If he struggles a little bit, will they have a bit of a controversy? It's kind of like if you have a quarterback in football that's hurt, and then another guy does well, and then the first guy comes back, and you don't know what to expect. The first time he throws an interception, you know, the first time McCann goes 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, or he starts to have his vision problems again, we'll start talking about who's going to be traded, what they can do. So could present more problems than solutions, but certainly can't hurt to get a guy back like McCann, especially, like I said, a team leader, a guy that's been the face of Atlanta, or one of the two faces with Chipper Jones the last 5, 6, 8 years.
Yeah, that's a good analysis, too, because Gattis, he's going to stay with the club. He's either going to play right field or first base until Jason Hayward returns. And from what I've been told, he's going to remain with the club because of his versatility. And it's pretty hard to send a guy like him down.
Absolutely, yeah. He's been so hot and a popular player, hitting all those big home runs off guys like Strasburg and the like.
And that's just it, you know. And then they also have that platoon situation with Johnson and Francisco. You know, Atlanta's in a very comfortable place because they have quite a few really good ball players. They can just, you know, with all these injuries, I mean, if they get one, God forbid, they just plug in another big star almost, or a potential one. Evan Gattis is a potential star someday, maybe.
Definitely. I mean, he's got 7 home runs, 18 RBI. That's second on the team to the all-world Justin Upton. So you're talking about, okay, you're going to move him out and bring in McCann, but how do you not bring back McCann? You know, I'm not sure if he's got the athleticism to play right field. And of course, Freddie Freeman is one of their up and coming stars too, just coming back from injury. He's certainly got power. He's batting over 300. So I guess an embarrassment of riches is never a bad thing if you're Atlanta and you're talking about which of the 300 hitters or which of the 7 to 10 home run guys you're going to play. But they'll certainly be scrutinized if they start to struggle. And I say start to struggle, but continue to struggle. As I said, 3-7, and now they're going on the road. They've got the Reds early this week. That won't be an easy assignment for sure. And they're starting, and the Nationals are creeping up on them, only 2 games out. So, you know, and it's only early May. So this will all play out over the next 4.5, almost 5 months.
Yeah, exactly. You know what else you have there is you have the possibility for a pretty interesting trade situations. Because, you know, Brian McCann is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. He's got that issue with his labrum. And, well, that's not a good issue for a catcher. And that's the only position I believe that he plays. And I think that if he does play first, he's not going to supplant Freddie Freeman. So you've got that situation there, too. And, of course, you've got Gattis, who possibly could be traded as well. And then you've got the kids over at third, Francisco and Johnson, one of those two guys. If Atlanta gets in trouble, they have viable people they can trade for a name, don't you think?
Definitely, especially a catcher. All teams, or a lot of the contending teams especially, are a little bit weak at the catcher position. It's the position you put a guy that can obviously receive your staff and do that sort of thing. You're not looking for a lot of offense out of there except for a few special situations. So if, you know, best case scenario, McCann comes up, hits well, they mix Gattis in, get him some at-bats, they're both doing well, then they can deal McCann to a contender probably in the American League because they don't want to trade it to anybody they might be playing in the postseason and get some prospects or another key spot, another key guy maybe in the middle infield or something that can accentuate their already strong lineup or go get a rotation guy, that sort of thing. So they certainly, it's an extra card in their deck that they can play and they're in good shape waiting this out. And like I said, hopefully he hits well, because if he doesn't hit well, then it's going to be hard to play him. And when you got a guy like Gattis hitting so well, so it'll be interesting to watch. It'll be one of the fun situations to watch. I think the Braves are an exciting team. They're a young team. They're built for success and they're atop the tough NL East. So, fun to watch the next 5 months.
Absolutely, and they have 3 quality catchers too. You know, everyone forgets about Gerald Laird too. I mean, they've got 3 good receivers down there, so it should be interesting. You know, you brought up Philadelphia earlier. Roy Halladay has been flown out to California for tests on his shoulder. My experience tells me that when a team sends someone away from the team and not to their own doctors, this is more serious than they let on, isn't it?
Definitely. There's something wrong with Halladay. He hasn't been himself. That's been pretty obvious. A guy that's been, if nothing else, consistent over the last 3, 4, 5 years, but just not this year. So unfortunately, I expect a bad prognosis to come out of this, and certainly the Phillies, given their stumble out of the block here, aren't in a position to just move on with this and stomach it and bring up another guy and continue. Red flags all over the place. It's unfortunate. Let's hope for the best. And maybe it's a small nagging injury he can get over. Maybe by the All-Star break, come back and be himself and represent him and the Phillies as we would expect. But I've got a lot of worries on this one.
Yeah, most people do. You know, his velocity has gone way down.
Exactly.
Over the last 18 months. You know, you saw it last year too, you know, but it didn't seem like a big concern only because, you know, Philly wasn't hitting and it just looked, the whole staff struggled except for Hamels. And it just, well, it looked like one of those years, you know. But this year, and the funny thing is he started to kind of right the ship a little bit. You know, he started, not the velocity part, but he started to adjust to the fact that he wasn't throwing the gas he used to throw. And I think now it's serious, and I think this has always been an issue. Perhaps he's one of those guys who take the ball with a broken arm. You know, this is a guy who's a competitor. And for this to finally come to this level, you have to start to wonder, what really is going on in there. You never know.
I was just saying, and if you're the Phillies, it may not be the worst thing to know that he's hurt, because if he's not hurt, then you might have even more questions. Like, is he really just washed up and he can't handle the loss of a loss, that sort of thing. So, you know, an injury is a short-term setback, but if it turns out his shoulder really is injured and it's not that bad, it just needs a little bit of rest or some sort of recuperation or a minor surgery, even for the rest of this year, maybe he can come back. He's 35, maybe he can come back next year. So sometimes you want to see that something is physically wrong, because otherwise the other side of the coin is, well, if it's not physical, then it's just the fact that he's not the same pitcher he was 3 or 4 years ago, and we're stuck with the salary and we can't trade him. And what do we do next?
That's exactly right. And they have a pitching staff that is kind of like upside down right now. So,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, I don't even know what's going on with Cliff Lee, really. It's another issue there, but we wish him all the best, him being Roy Halladay.
Absolutely.
Because you know what? Even though I can't stand the Phillies, Mr. Whitlock, I don't like the Phillies because I'm a Mets fan. But I have to explain these things to people sometimes, because I have some strong opinions. And if you don't listen to all the shows, or if you don't, like, you have the opportunity to speak to me before the show, and we know you kind of understand why I say the things I say. You don't always agree with them, but you understand it at least. So I have to make sure that's known. But we do wish Roy Halladay all the best. He is some kind of pitcher when he's healthy. And speaking of pitchers, Clay Buchholz has been accused of tossing the spitball. The Toronto Blue Jays folks have accused him of this. And this is really interesting that they did this now. And I'll tell you why, David. I watched the first home game, or the home opener for Fenway, at Fenway this season. It was one of the games I don't know what happened, but it wound up on my hard drive. I was trying to download the Mets, and I wound up with this thing. And it's okay. I don't mind watching Boston every once in a while. And I'm watching Buchholz, and I'm interested because I do fantasy baseball, and I'm interested in what he's doing. And I saw him go into the back of his head, his hair, and his really slick back. And I'm thinking, and watching him, and I'm going, is he wiping it off after every pitch, after he goes to his head? Because he's going there every pitch. And I'm thinking, what's up? Because his ball is moving like crazy. And that wasn't the case last year, especially the two-seamer. What have you been hearing about that? What do you make of all of it? Do you think it's his sour grapes because he's having a good year?
Well, sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. And I haven't watched him pitch this year, so I don't have the benefit of like you saw, but here's a guy that over his career has not been necessarily a super ace. He's had his moments for sure where he looked better than most, but you know, coming off a year in 2012 in which he started 29 games, but you know, was a mediocre 11-8 with a ERA north of 450. And all of a sudden his ERA is around one and he's, 6-0. So, okay, what's going on with that? And it was interesting, like you said, it was the Blue Jays, but of all the people to call him out, it was actually Jack Morris, the on the cusp of being a Hall of Fame member, and of course, hero for the Twins and the Tigers and the Blue Jays over his pitching career, was looking at it and called him out on the broadcast, on the Blue Jays broadcast. So certainly the Blue Jays are not in a strong position. They've been one of the most disappointing teams for sure. We could have a whole show talking about why that is, but now they call Buchholz out, and I think there might be a little something to it. He seems to have gotten comfortable. He's got that little tuft of hair in the back, maybe a little sweat, maybe a little gel, maybe a little of everything, as he's touching that and greasing up the ball. It'll be interesting to watch what happens the next time. Are the opposing managers going to start to ask some questions when the ball's come in? Are they going to try to, you know, if a foul ball trickles over to the visiting dugout, pick it up, see what's on it, see what it feels like? You certainly hope it's not, that it's on the up and up, and you love to see a guy that finds his groove and pitches well and does everything he's supposed to do, but But this will be an interesting situation to watch. Something, if you're watching a Buckholz game, there'll certainly be a lot of cameras on where his hands are going between the ball, the glove, his hair, his uniform, his mouth, those sorts of things, and seeing how it ends up being. And of course, now the other batters are aware, and they might get in the back of their head that he's doing something, has something up his sleeve, and that could get in their head too. So it could play out a lot of different ways.
Sure is. You know, Tom Verducci from Sports Illustrated, he wrote an article the other day about this. And apparently Verducci, and he's a very good writer, very credible reporter, at least in my opinion he is. Anyhow, he analyzed as much film as he could over the last two seasons. And he wrote a couple things here. He says that Buckholz regularly rakes his right index and middle finger, being careful to take or to keep his other fingers raised. And he does this on his arm, and apparently there's some kind of glistening substance on that left forearm. There are stains on his shirt. There are, and apparently his two-seam fastball is much improved, which is what I thought at first. I said, what's he putting on the ball? Because that's one of the tricks pitchers do. You know, they get that crap on the seams, get that a little wet, and the ball makes funny moves. You know, I played fast pitch softball for a couple big time seasons in New Zealand, and I saw pitchers do all kinds of things. And I don't know if you're familiar with that type of game, but they only use two balls in a game. You know, two balls. Each team provides a ball. And I've seen pitchers who are already ungodly good from 46 feet throwing the ball all kinds of crazy ways and at velocities that are just blow your mind. I've seen them take a nail and hammer it into the seams to raise the seams up so they can get their fingernails in there to throw their knuckleball even, or which would be like a changeup, better. I've seen all kinds of things. I don't know what to make of this, but I got to tell you, when I saw all this, I'm thinking I automatically reverted back to what I had seen in. Goodness gracious. If they're going to catch it, how are they going to catch him, though, David? That's the only thing. How do they catch him?
Right, yeah. We've had situations before where, like, a Joe Niekro was approached on the mound and had a foreign substance, or they catch a guy with something on his hat. I mean, it's an interesting scenario because we're so harsh on those players using performance-enhancing drugs, as we should. You know, they're definitely cheating the game. They're doing things to make themselves better, to get an advantage. Definition of cheating is a PED guy. Sometimes we take guys with cork bats and spitballs and scuffing the ball, I think, on a little bit different level. And I don't know if it should be or not. That's a subject for another show. But, you know, usually these guys come in, maybe if they get caught, they're suspended for, I don't know, you know, less than a month, maybe 10, 15 days or something. So, I mean, I remember back being a Houston Astros fan when Mike Scott was dominating in 1986. And, of course, you remember that because of that big series with the Mets. And there was lots of accusations that he was doing all kinds of things to the ball, be it scuffing or roughing it up or intentionally throwing it in the dirt so he'd get the ball back and do things with it. And, of course, he, you know, won the Cy Young and did all kinds of great things in the postseason. But I remember a famous quote from him. He said, I may or may not have ever scuffed the ball, but if I got a scuffed ball, I knew what to do with it. So same with Clay Buckholz. He may or may not be spitballing every pitch, but he may be able to kind of get his hand a little moist and do some things with it that he otherwise might. And kind of looking at his stats, you know, here's a guy that has typically had about, you know, three strikeouts every four innings, that sort of thing. And now he's got a lot more strikeouts and also a little bit of bump in walks, too. So that might be indicative of a guy who's doing some things to the ball to make it move a little bit more. I don't know. So it'll take one of those investigations where somebody calls the ball out and they look and they almost give him a search and seizure there on the mound. And they look at his cap and look at the back of his head and feel and see how he's see what he's doing with the ball, but it may not come to that. You know, what do you do if you're another team? But they'll probably, if nothing else, they'll start to call for it to try to break him off his rhythm. If he's got a rhythm going, if it's three or four innings of five, six, seven strikeouts, they may step out and ask to do it, and we'll see how the umpires react to that.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up the scuffed balls because the Boston catchers and many American League umpires say that Buckholz is one of those pitchers who won't throw a scuffed ball. that he always throws it back to the catcher and asks for a clean one. That's exactly right. So maybe he is doctoring the ball and he just doesn't and he wants to, you know, the ball looks clean. What are you going to do? See, that's the thing, you know, because I remember they used to come out there about Negro, and it would be like frisking him like at the airport.
Right, I know. Guys will have a metal wand out there, you know. It's like, take your hat off. Let me reach under your uniform here. And then they come out with a tack or a bottle of Vaseline or something. I don't know.
Well, I know pitchers, in, like I said, in the softball who used to have sandpaper. They'd cut a hole in the palm of their glove, and they'd have like really rough sandpaper in there, and then they would scuff up the seams a little bit. So there's all kinds of tricks that these pitchers use. I don't remember the name of the gentleman who was a minor league pitcher, and he wrote a book about his exploits in the minor leagues, and I guess he had a couple of cups of coffee in the pros, and he talked about what was in those bags that the pitchers carry out to the bullpen. They all have their own little bags. And there's like shaving gel in there, not shaving cream, shaving gel.
Gel.
And Fix-It-Dent and all kinds of stuff. Shoe goo. Well, the shoe goo I get because they don't want to rip up their toe because no one uses those toe guards anymore. They don't look cool, I guess. But it is a crazy thing, though. And if Buchholz is caught, the punishment is like really not that severe, is it?
No, I don't think it would be on the order, like I said, a PED suspension where you're talking 25, 50 games. I think he'd probably get something as if he plucked a guy, you know, in a beanball incident and try to make him miss a start or two. And sometimes the evidence is such, you know, when you do a drug test, you kind of get a positive or a negative. And of course, if it's a positive for Ryan Braun, you get a second chance and you don't get suspended. But for everybody else, if you get a positive test.
You're preaching to the choir.
I'm baiting you at this point. But you know, so they'll say, well, we kind of think he did, unless they catch him, you know, literally with red-handed with some sort of substance that they can point to and say, well, we tested it and it's really Vaseline and it's right here. Then it's kind of like we went out there, it looked suspicious, and so we went ahead and ejected them and then let the league office handle it. And they'll probably, because, you know, the Players Association has a say and a stake in this, and they'll defend their guy, and that's their job to defend their guy. So they'll probably, if they try to suspend him for 45, 50 games, they would say, you know, this is cruel and unusual punishment, and try to get down to 10 or 15 or like you said, maybe 5 or 10, and he'll miss a start and we'll move on with it. Perhaps he won't do it again, or it's tough. Like you said, what do you do about hair gel and sweat? All as we get into the summer, all the players perspire. There's easy ways to kind of get a little moisture on your hands if that's the thing you're trying to do. And it'll be interesting, like I said, those foul balls that go towards the opposing team's dugout. I remember, like, again, in the Mike Scott days or some of the Joe Negro days, it's funny to it. It'll be hit to somebody, and they'll pass the ball down the dugout, and they'll all kind of look at it and decide whether there's anything funny with it. So you might see that sort of thing. I don't know. But we'll see how it plays out.
Or you might get, like, a Jason Grimsley from the Boston Red Sox who will catch the ball and run and hide it.
Right, that's right.
Anyway.
Blow it up.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, and I didn't take the Ryan Braun bait this time. Maybe next week. Anyway.
This time.
Yeah, because, don't get me started. Anyway, great stuff, man. We're on to a flying start or off to a flying start this early Monday morning. And when we return, we're going to take a look at Rubens Rockies. And we're going to answer a listener's question about what's really up with the Washington Nationals. And we'll be right back.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show.
Looking for the latest information on your favorite sports team? Why not check out 15-year-old founder Trevor Uren's ProSportsExtra.com. Updated daily, by a staff of over 30 writers, ProSportsExtra.com is the place to be. You can check them out, and I insist that you do, at ProSportsExtra.com. Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com.
Hi, this is Phil Mason from The Phil Mason Show and This Week in Tennis. When I'm looking for sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com.
This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
tonight we come together.
Cool. And I think it's cool.
Somebody's going to be having fun tonight.
All I want to do is go have a good time. It's all about
tonight. Phil Nason.
Some of the things that these people say.
Jimmy Z.
That is such twisted logic.
Alex Jones.
You heard it here first. Now it's mainstream news.
Weeknights starting at 10 Eastern.
Okay, well, let's go party, baby.
Yeah, tomorrow can wait till tomorrow.
Ah, it's a lot of fun.
I said tomorrow can wait till tomorrow. It's all about tonight.
And we'll have fun, I promise.
Yeah, it's all about tonight.
Weeknights on the Talk Superstation.
It's all about tonight.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It is Monday afternoon. It is May the 6th, 2013, and we're really happy to have you here. David Whitlock from sports-kings.com/readingbetweentheseams is here, and we're going to just jump right in to our weekly segment called
Rumors Rockies.
Oh, you again.
What is this? What's going on here? What are you people doing here?
Houston, we have a problem.
Rumors Rockies.
Get with the program, Megan.
That's horrifying. I will continue to be horrified by that story all day long.
Shine, shine, shine.
Rumors Rockies.
There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Yep, or do. Ruben's Rockies. My friend Ruben is a monster Rocky fan. He's a super fan. And we want to always make sure to talk about the Colorado Rockies, the team that he loves. In fact, I wrote a letter, David, to the Colorado Rockies. And I said, you ought to give this guy season tickets. Because he's your biggest fan. And he'll probably be one of the few people that'll show up toward the end of the season.
That's right, because it won't be pretty at that stage.
Probably not. But you know what? We do kind of take a little run at these fellas. But I got to say, they're hanging in there, aren't they?
Yeah, they definitely are. If you look kind of over their last week or two, they're regressing towards a more of a 500 team. A little bit of a surprise this weekend. They lost 2 out of 3 at home to the Tampa Rays. And the Tampa Rays are kind of one of the more disappointing teams in the American League. And as I've predicted before, I've usually done pretty well in predicting the Rockies' quite, and I was a little bit off. I would have said they would have taken at least two out of three from Tampa. Again, this was in Colorado, where they specialize in taking teams, especially that hadn't played in Colorado a lot, like an American League team, and feast on them. You know, they usually hit it to the gaps. They've got their outfield knows how to play the outfield. The other team maybe can't judge the ball because of the rare air and all that sort of thing. But the Rays were able to take two out of three. But to counteract that, they actually took two out of three from L.A. And I think last week I predicted that L.A. would have more success in that series than they did. So, you know, two out of three here one way, two out of three the other way. They're not losing anything. They are behind the Giants right now. The Giants are playing live right now as we tape this against the Dodgers, and the Giants are looking to sweep the Dodgers. The Giants have won five straight, so you start to look and say, uh-oh, is this the Giants waking up? Is Colorado going to be able to answer this? And I think certainly the West is still wide open. You've got the Giants on a little bit of a hot streak. The Dodgers have had even more injuries this week. The Rockies are there, and then our surprising show favorite, the Arizona Diamondbacks, are also hanging around 500. So nobody's separating themselves in this division. I don't think the Giants are going to do it in the short term or the long term. So this will play out. But the Colorado Rockies still doing well, not quite off to the hot start that they were. They are leading the National League in runs scored, which is not a surprise. And they'll probably continue to do that the whole season.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though. Honestly, Troy Tulowitzki, he hurt his shoulder, so who knows what's up with him, but his OPS is 1.098. And here's the stat that's mind-blowing. His offensive wins against replacement, 1.3. That's pretty good in that category. Michael Kadire, 1.0. Carlos Gonzalez, 1.1. Dexter Fowler, 1.5. That offensive war stat is huge. These guys haven't seemed to slow down, whether they're on the road or at home, offensively anyway. But, gosh, you have to almost wonder, can they keep it up? Especially like a Dexter Fowler. Now, he started off really hot. He had a lot of home runs early. Now he's at 8. He's actually leading the Colorado Rockies in home runs. The other guy that's interesting to watch is just Josh Rutledge. He's another young fellow who is definitely taking care of business. People playing fantasy are starting to look at him a little more, and they should. He's a very good alternative, especially with all these injuries, at second or short. But my goodness, what happens with Colorado if something seriously goes wrong with Tulowitzki?
Yeah, they'll be in trouble if Tulowitzki is hurt for a long period of time. And then we had a blog this week, you know, with that shoulder injury on a flukish play kind of at the plate where he was sliding around a guy and didn't look awkward, but kind of rolled over. And so he missed a few days and he's come back now. So if you look at his last 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, he's 5-for-7 with a double and a homer and 4 RBIs. So he seems to be healthy. Unfortunately, he's the kind of guy who's just had a career of only getting 100, 120 games, sometimes only 40 or 50 games. And you hate to see that. He's such a talent. He literally could be an MVP type candidate. He's probably the best shortstop in baseball, if healthy, 160 games a year. All the talent. He's big, hits for power, plays defense. Sometimes they want to talk about moving him to third or first or something else, but all his injuries are usually on the base paths or swinging. That sort of thing. You mentioned Dexter Fowler. He had a little bit of an injury this week, too. He missed Saturday's game with a little bit of a hip problem. So he came back Sunday, which is good. But today he was 0-for-5 with 3 strikeouts. So it could be a situation where the hip is still bothering him. And you look over his last 10 games and all of a sudden, you know, that hot start with the power. He's only had kind of one home run the last 10 games and only stolen one base. And that's kind of his cup of tea, is to steal a lot of bases and be getting on base. In the process, he's still getting his hits. He's still getting a couple doubles, some home runs, and scoring a run. He had about six games in a row. He's scoring a run a game. So certainly nothing to criticize, but certainly I think if you're looking at a guy who's going to step back, it probably would be Dexter Fowler. They'll need Tulowitzki to be healthy. They'll need Kadire to keep it up. And then Carlos Gonzalez probably will hit for a little bit more power than he has so far. And another guy, Willian Rosario, who's had an outstanding start with 7 home runs, batting .299. So they're getting it from all aspects. They're getting it from outfielders. They're getting it from infielders. Their pitching hasn't been as bad as we might have predicted in the preseason. But when you're leading the league in runs, the pitching doesn't have to be that outstanding. It just needs to be good enough to hold the opponent off and win the games.
That's exactly right. Chacin is pitching really well. Jeff Francis, there's a candidate for I don't like Colorado pitchers. I desperately don't like them on my fantasy team because of the fact they pitch in Colorado.
Right.
But Francis has 21 strikeouts already. Another guy who's really stepping up is Matt Belisle. He's had 6 holds. To me, a bullpen is everything in my world. And these guys have getting it done. I'm not sold on his pitching staff, but, you know, they're hanging in there right now. Now, they have New York coming in, and then they go on the road with St. Louis this week. Now, I think, honestly, they can beat New York at home. They take care of business. I mean, they really do play well at home. But, man, when they go to St. Louis, that's going to be a test.
Yeah, St. Louis has been playing really, really well. And some, you just look at it and how they do it. They get the guys like Carpenter hurt. They lose Pujols. They get Beltran. They lose Burke. Beltran's health is always in question. And then they get Berkman, who left. And some other injuries. And there they are at like 20-11. I agree. It'll be interesting to watch that Yankees-Colorado series. There's another American League team that's coming to town that isn't used to playing there, but it's a good team. And then I would think that they would hold themselves well there. But going to St. Louis, like you said, would be a tough assignment. This could be a situation where they lose 4 or 5 of these games if they don't play well and they don't get hitting on all cylinders like they have been.
Yeah, the problem with the Yankees guys, though, their pitching staff, is they have a tendency to keep the ball up a little bit. You know, they like to challenge people up.
Right.
You don't want to do that.
No.
Coors Field,
no.
Boy. Because those kids will hit the ball out. But, yeah, I think so. You know, if they go 5, you know something? Here's where the rubber will meet the road, at least as far as I'm concerned. This is a serious thing. I'm not very high on the Yankees, but I'm higher on them now than I was, say, 4 weeks ago. I would say if they can go 500 this week, they're all right. This team could be for real and could compete for the West.
I think they'll compete for the West. I think they'll be there.
Okay.
The Dodgers being where they are, I think it's Colorado is going to be right there, barring a Tulowitzki injury.
Perhaps you're right. I think so. You know, but L.A., geez, how do you like to be them right now? Hanley Ramirez is out again. He just came back.
Again. Yeah. But like, he come back for what, 3 games, 5 games? Different injury.
Not even that.
Right.
I have him on my fantasy team. I was doing a happy dance, man, when he came
back. Yeah, me too. And I had him on a team. I drafted him on spec and said, I can't wait to get that, play him at shortstop, you know? And so I drafted him at shortstop. And now I'm sitting here with a crappy shortstop and a guy that's out for another month or two. Who knows?
I had to pick up Josh Rutledge this week to make up for the difference. Oh, Maron. But we'll be talking about that with Nick Falk tomorrow's show. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of
Rockets Rockies.
All right, David, we have this last little bit. We're going to talk about the Washington Nationals. One of our listeners, apparently nobody's ever heard of my show, but we get lots of listeners and lots of questions. What's up with the Nationals? Jeez, where do you want to start, really? They shouldn't be doing so bad. But then they're not really doing that bad. You know, it's weird with them because you look at that team, especially how they started, and then how quickly they've come back, and it's nuts. What would you, if you were going to pick like one major thing that's going on with the Washington Nationals, what would that be?
I would say probably regressing to the mean for guys like Strasburg and Gio Gonzalez. Here's certainly Gio Gonzalez was a finalist for the Cy Young, and then Strasburg, who was, of course, shut down, and that just angered everybody, that wanted to see him pitch in the postseason. And so now that he's a full-timer, everybody said, well, now he's just going to win 20 games. You know, it's a given. He'll win 20 games. He'll have a 2.5 ERA, and he'll be the Cy Young favorite. And it's not quite that easy. All of a sudden, He's been around the league for a year now, so the opposing teams have seen what he has, how he attacks batters. The batters have a little bit better approach. They know the speed of his pitches, how to catch their bat up to him. He hasn't done that badly, but he just hasn't dominated like they expected. So I certainly think that their pitching has kind of gone that way. Their hitting has also been somewhat of a disappointment, especially guys like Adam LaRoche, who we, you know, had a really, really great season, then hit free agency. And then everybody thought, okay, well, here's a guy who's going to hit 30 home runs, knock in 100, and he's batting 168. Jason Worth has been banged up. Certainly Bryce Harper has been as advertised, I think. He's hitting over 300. He's leading the team in home runs, leading the team in RBIs. He's not striking out a lot, so that's good, especially for a young ball player. So you're looking at a team that's trying to feel their way out. They also signed some guys like Dan Heron, and he hasn't exactly lived up to his billing with the ERA north of 5. Like I mentioned, Gonzalez at 4.07. Back to Strasburg. I mean, you're talking about a guy, he's 1-4, but his ERA is 3.45. So there's nothing out of the ordinary with that. It seems like when he pitches, they don't hit well. And then Mr. Zimmerman, as you called him, Jordan Zimmerman, has been their ace. If I had to pick about an ace off that staff, Zimmerman might have been about the fourth choice. But here he's sitting at 5-1 with a 1.64 ERA. So at least he's picked up the slack. Like you said, slow start, but hey, they're only two games out of first place. And we're talking about with those Atlanta Braves and that ridiculous start. Hey, they're right there. If they can get Strasburg to come around, Gio Gonzalez to come around, I think they'll be in the mix all year. I think Atlanta's kind of regressing to the mean as well. There's a lot of questions there. I think our expectation was just entirely too high that this team would all of a sudden win 100-105 games. And they're not quite that good. They're one of the better teams in the National League, if not, you know, one of the best top two or three. But we just got to wait it out and see how they play.
Well, my expectations of them weren't very high because I don't like this team either. Mr. Whitlock, I don't like this team either, and here's why. I'm a New York Mets fan. Case closed. I don't like any of those teams except for the Atlanta Braves, only because I also like to bet on baseball games sometimes. And Atlanta wins. That's why. But really, here's the thing. Mr. Zimmerman, anyone who's followed my fantasy show on Tuesday will know that at the beginning of the year, I said he's going to be the steal of the season. I saw it in spring training. I love watching this kid pitch. That's why I call him Mr. Zimmerman. And he is Mr. Zimmerman. When you're 5-1 with a 1.64 ERA, you're doing all right. And he's not striking out a lot of guys, though. He's probably not your best bet, probably in fantasy, but with a 0.75 whip, not a bad thing. Steven Strasburg is hurt, dude. There's something going on there. He's getting tightness in his forearm. There's another theory out there being bounced around that because they shut him down early last year, against his wishes, by the way, right, he's not happy to be pitching for that team because he doesn't trust them, that he wants to compete, and he feels, and these are all rumors out there, by the way, he feels that they're not going to let him compete, and he wants to compete. That's what I've been hearing. Anyway, he's been a disappointment, but it's pretty hard to be a disappointment when you have 44 strikeouts in 44 innings. You know, he's just had a run of bad luck. Okay, he's walked a few guys this year. His control has not been there as what we're used to seeing. You know, his ERA is 3.45, which is a little high, but it's not out of the norm. It's high for an ace, okay? But I never thought of him as the ace this year. I always said it would be Jordan Zimmerman. Dan Heron has been up and down. He's been consistent. He's 24 strikeouts to 5 walks in 32 innings. It's not bad. The problem is he's had a few blunders, like 7 of them that went out of the yard. That's not good. Plus, he's given up 18 earned runs. That's only second to the other issue, Gio Gonzalez. Gio Gonzalez is not doing what he did last year. And there's speculation about that as well. You know, his name has been linked to the little deal down in Miami. So
you never know. Maybe he's trying too hard to prove that he's innocent rather than just going back to what he was doing. I don't know, but he's still striking out a lot of guys. 36 strikeouts, 18 walks, but he's given up 19 earned runs, but only 4 home runs. 32 innings pitched. He's had his butt lit up a few times. That's where I see it right there. You have issues here. Ross Detweiler is another one who they picked up who hasn't pitched really that badly. But he's 1-3 with a 2.50 ERA. How is that possible?
Yeah, you look at Detweiler, and he's given up more hits than innings pitched, and he's walking a lot of guys, and he's not striking out very many, but somehow he's been, he's 1-3 on the record side, but yeah, he's kept his ERA down. He's gotten out of trouble, gotten, you know, 90 pitches per start. Certainly Zimmerman and Detweiler are the two guys that have more than pulled their weight, and if you look at the team going forward, if especially if Gonzalez and Herron can get together, if one of the two of those guys resembles as they've been in the past, and then Strasburg, like you said, he has had very little run support. He hasn't won a game since the opening day, but I'm not sure it's something physical. There's people looking at, you know, videotape and every inch of his wind up to see if something looks amiss. I think he's like I said, the league got a year of tape on him. They know how to attack him now. They know which pitches to lay off of. That's a big deal because he used to get so many strikeouts, and now he's only a strikeout an inning, which isn't bad, but not the rate he was. And also, I think there is something to the fact that they're shutting him down. They don't want him to go more than 100-110 pitches. Again, they may let him go all year, but at the same time, he needs a lot of pitches to get through batters, and it may or may not be a good or bad thing for him. But certainly, he doesn't get through more than 6 1/3, 7 innings any of his starts. So then you're relying on your bullpen, or if your hitters haven't come around and he hadn't had the run support, then he's not going to get the wins. And so he doesn't seem like a guy that's going to win the 20 games because he's not going to be there to battle through those middle to late innings.
That's exactly right. Now, offensively, Bryce Harper has been better than expected. If you got him in the second round of your fantasy draft and you paid less than $25, you, my friend, got a steal. He's doing okay, but you know what? He's a young kid. They don't have a – you know, this is another thing. They don't have a single hitter on this team with a plus offensive win against replacement, unlike Colorado, who has 5 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce Harper is doing what he's supposed to do. He's 20 years old. People are pretty critical of him. I'm not a big fan of Bryce Harper. But whatever. I mean, he's leading the team. Ian Desmond is somebody – we're going to talk about him as well on tomorrow's fantasy team or fantasy show. He's having an interesting year, really. He really is. 4 home runs, 11 RBIs, 11 doubles. 2 triples, 34 hits, 32 strikeouts, 3 walks, 3 stolen bases. Crazy stuff.
But he's got more extra base hits than Bryce Harper does with those 11 doubles.
Sure.
And more hits than Harper. And so from a guy you didn't necessarily expect, he certainly answered the bell. And like you said, can't wait to hear what you say about him on your fantasy show, because he's, as a middle infielder, he's the kind of guy that – you can either sell high and trade as he's doing now, or try to buy him now, trade for him now, and expect him to continue it.
Well, that's just what we're going to talk about. One of the listeners has Ian Desmond and J.J. Hardy on the same team, and they want to know which one we would let go, and we'll let you know tomorrow on that. Gio Gonzalez, he's got a plus 1.89 OPS. Maybe they ought to let him bat more often. But you're right. You know, you said earlier about Jason Wirth. He's been hurt a little bit. Denard Span has been better than advertised. But this is a team that just hasn't put it together at the plate yet, really, as a team. They don't get the big hits. Adam LaRoche has been a monster disappointment.
Right.
But then he signed that big contract extension. And when you do that, usually it doesn't always work out. But, Ryan Zimmerman is another one. He's been injured. He's back. You know, he had some issues with his throwing, but they say it's probably more to do with the hamstring issue he had than anything else. But this is a team that has the potential to score a lot of runs. They just don't seem to do it. And plus, they're an awful defensive team as well. I mean, Desmond has, what, 8 errors now this year? They're not playing really well at that in the field. And a lot of these things have to do with the fact that the pitching, or it's what's made the pitching look worse than it probably is. I don't know. You know, can they right the ship? Of course they can. They won a couple games in a row against Atlanta, which was big, by the way, because, you know, if it wasn't for Mr. Zimmerman stepping up, they had lost, like, what, 7 or 8 in a row to Atlanta?
I think it was 9 going back to last year. And you're right. I mean, it's hard to say that that, quote, saved their season. But to think of those two games they saved in the standings by reconciling the series at 2-2 each when they looked just awful and there was no answers. And there was even questions coming from their manager. Like, he was shuffling the lineup like a deck of cards, like to try to get anything different, putting in new guys, something to change it. And they were able to actually scrap two games out of that series. And then they hit the weekend and did well also. Like you said, Ryan Zimmerman's a guy that's going to do better. He's been battling injury. So that's a guy they can expect to do better. And then on the other side, Danny Espinosa is another guy who's been very disappointing, kind of a guy that's always teetered in the low batting average, but gave you some power. And now the batting average is getting so low that they may have to consider bringing up Anthony Rendon. They brought him up to replace Zimmerman for that week or two. He was gone. And now they just shipped him back, but they may need to reconsider that position. And I bet you if this team makes the postseason, you'll see Anthony Rendon be a part of that as on a regular basis. They'll find a way to put him in the lineup, for the stretch run, et cetera. So I think they'll start hitting, on cylinders a little bit better. I think they're just a little out of whack now, but they're only 2 games out, like I said.
Absolutely. I think Stephen Lombardozzi is going to get more of an opportunity to play, too, because you're absolutely right. Danny Espinosa has been a big disappointment, especially for fantasy players. But where will Washington end? Well, I still think they're going to finish in second. I still have Atlanta. Who knows? But anyway, that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to especially thank David Whitlock for being the trooper that he is. And hanging in there, we had a little internet problem here in Greece. I think the phone company went on strike. They do that sometimes here. Anyhow, tomorrow night we're going to talk fantasy baseball with Nick Falk. On Wednesday, we'll be doing basketball with Andy Flint. Thursday night, we're going to look at the movie 42 with Jamie and Smith. And on Friday, we'll be talking baseball with the guys. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.